Along with John Sterling, I'm Michael Kay. You're listening to Yankees Baseball on what is now a Thursday morning in New York City. This is Game 4. The Diamondbacks lead the series 2-1. The game is tied at 3-3, bottom of the 10th.
How do these fans come up with signs? There's a fan who has a sign. You know what the sign says? Mr. November.
And the 3-2 pitch. Swung on a drill to right field. Going back, Sanders. On the track. At the wall. See ya! See ya! See ya! A home run by Derek Jeter. He pumps his fist in the air as he rounded first.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 89 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. Or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. We're back, everybody. After what felt like forever, I'm not going to lie. It was only, what, like 2 weeks or so? 3 weeks since our last recording?
I think we just missed two episodes,
but
yeah.
Holy shit. And couple it with the fact that we are now in a new year, it feels like we didn't record for like 6 months, and now it's just like a totally new beginning.
Ah, crap. Our timing's off, too.
Folks, I was seriously just looking. I was like, I looked away from the camera at the wall like, oh, God, it's going to be a long episode for us.
I saw you. Yeah, man. I mean, it's worth noting, guys. Fortunately, nobody at Breaking Balls headquarters had COVID. We had some close contacts, trying to do the right thing, play it safe. So everybody's fine here. Thank you for those of you who reached out, expressed concern, but we're all good. We hope you guys are too. And we're excited to get back to it.
And getting back to it means, first of all, Happy New Year. We made it through 2021 somehow. Here we are, 2022, ready and raring to go, but...
But everything's fucked up because we were all set. We got our 100th episode coming up. We were all set for some random weekend in March. Now it's a different random weekend in March. So everything sucks now.
It's closer to opening day, but still not quite it's on still, opening day.
Well, you know what? At this point, the win would be if it's during spring training at all, the way things are going with the lockout. I'll take that.
And speaking of the lockout, it's been almost a month since our last recording. But there has still only been one thing that's happened since then. That's how fucking desperate we are.
It's worth noting this one thing happened like the day after we recorded, and nothing bigger has happened since then.
Classic Breaking Balls. I mean, the Mets hired Buck Showalter to be their manager this year. He's going to be wearing number 11, and he was clearly the number one candidate. Not that Cohen came out and was like, this is my list and this is in order of how I want them to be. It was clear that he was the number one just because he was the one with the most like pedigree.
Yeah, it was his job to lose. And so it didn't really come to anybody's surprise, certainly not ours, when he got the gig. His introductory press conference was great. I think right off the bat, you could see, you know, we talked about the presence that he brings and the guy's familiar with the New York media. You could see that right away. You know, he was joking around. He was good, you know, using people's names and stuff. Great PR. He had his wife in the interview the whole time. I think she answered a total of like 1.5 questions, but she was there. And so, you know, kind of driving home the whole, hey, with the Mets, it's a family affair, you know, Steve and Alex Cohen. And oh, God, I should have looked up Buck's wife's name because I watched the press conference, but she didn't register. Yeah, Buck and Buckette Showalter. And it's canceled this early into 2022. No, but anyway, seriously, I liked what he had to say. You know, I mean, and again, introductory press conferences is one of those things where, like, if you don't fuck it up, you did well. But even beyond that, he did a good job. Some of the specific language he used, like talking about eliminating excuses, I like to hear a lot. His answers when he was inevitably asked about analytics, because we know that was one of the hesitations with him. You know, how's this old school guy going to incorporate it? And he talked about it just like it's information. And he wants the information. He wants to discern that information along with what everybody else brings to the table. So it seems like we're in store for a collaborative effort. It seems like we have a confident, solid, experienced leader. And as I've said all along, I'm excited to see where it goes. You know, he even, Buck went out of his way to speak highly of the other guys. That was Espada and Quartararo, who are up for the job. He said something to the effect of, you know, if I was in Steve and Billy's position, I'd be looking at these same kind of guys. So I'm hoping that they're all kind of on the same page and that Buck, in addition to being the favorite, also, you know, genuinely earned it with that job interview and, you know, them getting what they want on both sides. So I'm excited. I'm into it. I'm hoping that we have baseball games to see Buck manage in a few months at this point.
As a non-Mets fan, beyond seeing how he'll do as a manager, what I'm most interested in seeing is how the New York sports media handles him as a Mets manager. Because like I said, right, when we were talking about in the last episode, he's going to be very tough for them to just fucking throw under a bus like they would with literally anybody else that's been the manager in the last like 10 years. So Buck already has all the respect. I feel like the Mets are really trying to get ahead of everything coming up and getting ahead of the LOL Mets shit. And this is like a huge step in that direction.
It's true. And even, like I said, just watching him interact with the media, like Buck is quick, man. He is funny. He knows how to handle it. And you can tell that it's not his first rodeo. And especially in comparison to, you know, we just went through a year of Rojas. Whenever he got asked anything remotely difficult, it'd be like, you know, a pause. Let me rub the back of my neck. Well, you know, guys. Right, yeah. Looking off stage. How do I answer this one? That's good stuff. And on top of that, we're scraping the barrel for news here. It's been heavily rumored that the Mets are going to be putting Jeff McNeil on the trading block once things open up again. And this to me also potentially speaks towards, you know, they're trying to create a clubhouse culture here because, you know, for whatever attitude issues McNeil has, it seems like there's some friction between him and Lindor. And Lindor is not going anywhere. So even if just trying to get some value for McNeil is a matter of cleaning up the clubhouse a little bit, it all seems consistent, and consistency is gold for Mets fans. You know, after what we've been through, like, I'll take it. It seems like it's part of a bigger picture, and that's huge. And it shouldn't be huge, but for us, it's huge, you know?
I mean, what do we always say here? That you got to trust the process at some point. And if you never trust the process, then how is this your chosen form of entertainment? How are you, like, turning off from your regular life to watch sports to just never trust in the process and trust in your team and believe in your team at some point? Now's the time.
Right, yeah. This is not a sport of instant gratification.
Now that we are into January, by the time you listen to this episode, Hall of Fame voting has basically come and gone because I believe the ballots are due on the 31st of December. We don't find out the results, I think, until the end of the month when they announce whoever's going to be elected. And the same dumbass ballots are coming from the same dumbass writers. There's very little change there. The good guys, the good ballots always come from the same guys and vice versa. Except there was one writer this year that completely fucking shocked me. Shocked. His name is Kevin Kernan. I'm sure you've all heard of him. He used to write for The Post. He now writes for Ball 9. And he voted not only for, I believe, all 10 votes, where in the past he's only done like 6, 5, blah, 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 but he voted for Bonds, Clemens, A-Rod, Manny, all of these guys that in years past, and he's written, you know, the whole diatribe about why he votes the way that he does. Last year was, you know, he spoke with a Hall of Famer who said, why are you voting for these PED guys? And blah, and that was like his explanation for why he believes that they shouldn't be in the Hall, because Hall of Famers who are in there now don't want them. Well, this year, he finally came around and said, you know what? Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame. So what the fuck are we doing is basically what he said.
And, you know, to me, it seems like the whole PED thing just kind of reached a saturation point, you know, to the point where, like, now, especially with guys, you know, Ortiz and A-Rod being on the ballot now, it's like there's so many guys, both confirmed PED users and guys just with it attached to them, you know, that stigma following them. It gets to the point where it's like, we don't know for sure, and we're never going to know. And there's probably some guys that we aren't talking about in the PED conversation that did use them, and probably some guy that we're convinced did that didn't. Like, we're never going to know. And after a certain point, and credit to Kernan for doing it, you got to pull the plug on the whole, you know, being holier than thou about it, because you don't know. And at the end of the day, all that we do know is what they did or didn't do on the field.
And as much as I fucking hate to say it, and it pains me as a Yankee fan, but I think we really have David Ortiz to thank for the turnaround that guys like Kernan and maybe a few other voters here and there have done because
he was nice to them. So they're going to vote for him.
Exactly. Yeah. And basically it was, how could they possibly justify voting for Ortiz, but not voting for these guys? Cause at least listen, I love A-Rod, obviously. A-Rod and Manny, while I disagree with the reasoning, I can understand when voters have the line of, I'm not going to vote for guys who were suspended. So that removes them. How can you vote for Ortiz and not vote for Bonds or Clemens? Then I saw some writers were arbitrarily, well, all of these lines are arbitrary, but this one was like triple arbitrary in that they were like, well, I'm voting for Ortiz because, you know, he wasn't directly linked to any, you know, scandal like Balco. It's like, all right, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, we're now just trying to decide. Like, the writers are like, how am I going to, you know, be the arbiter of baseball history this time? And how am I going to do the mental gymnastics to make it make sense for voting for this one, but not for that one?
Well, and that's what it comes down to, and it becomes more apparent the more time you spend thinking about this year after year. It's mental gymnastics, because like as much as the Hall makes their half-assed attempt to be like, well, here's the guidelines, and there's a character clause, and there's this. At the end of the day, there is so much leeway for every individual writer to be like, well, to me, the ballot means this, and I'm drawing this line, and you know, people will incorporate, you know, people take the character clause seriously. And it's like, okay, now nobody with any domestic abuse stuff. And then, you know, the next guy will be like, yeah, well, I'm only doing the guys who actually got suspended. And so, yeah, you're right. Like, in some ways, Ortiz might be like the great unifier here. It's like, well, he's obviously getting in. And if Ortiz is getting in, then there's stuff with other players that needs to be reckoned with, like you were saying. You know, like his, once he gets in the Hall and it seems he's ahead in the balloting right now, I believe, right?
Yeah, I believe of what we know, which isn't much. I think it's less than like 100 so far, yeah. But he's well over the 75%.
He's in like sure thing territory at least, right? So yeah, so once he seemingly inevitably gets in and there's guys like, you know, A-Rod and Bonds and whoever might not get in, there's going to be a moment of reckoning where those mental gymnastics are going to come to a head and you're going to have to, well... I was going to say, you're going to have to figure it out, but people are still going to find a way to rationalize it away. We just don't know what creative ways they're going to come up with yet.
And I know this is going to sound a bit tinfoil hat-ish, but they technically didn't fail. Ortiz didn't fail a test. A-Rod didn't fail a test. What happened is back in 03, when the league was like, hey, maybe we should look into the steroid thing because it seems to be a bit of a problem. The Players Association agreed to do an anonymous test, and... that was the test. Of course, those anonymous results got leaked and A-Rod was on it and Ortiz was on it. So, of course, the dominoes fell for A-Rod, but the dominoes wouldn't have fallen in the way necessarily that they did had those results not get leaked. Mm. And A-Rod was already like a star player. Ortiz, not so much. So I feel like, yeah, A-Rod made his choices, whatever. But if we're not going to hold Ortiz to that test and that failing of a test, quote unquote, even though it's not failing, how are we not doing the same for A-Rod? Like, yeah, he got suspended, but the league then made a point to scapegoat this man. We can all agree that the league loves to scapegoat teams or players as like, this is the only problem and the rest of the league is totally fine, everybody. And A-Rod was that guy. And don't get me wrong, he made his own decisions. It's not like he was framed, but there's like this level of like, A-Rod's this huge bad guy because he acted like a fucking jackass when the league was clearly trying to target him and clearly trying to nail him against the wall. And it's like, yeah, he was a 25-year-old and acted like a moron. Who hasn't at 25? Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see how this turns out because what happens this year, now that we're almost guaranteed to get somebody heavily associated with PEDs in, it's going to heavily influence what happens moving forward. And it's really going to change the dynamic of the conversation next year. So even beyond, you know, just being excited because we're actually going this year. So whoever gets in, we get to see talk. But no, seriously, it's going to be interesting in terms of the long-term ramifications to me as to what do they decide to do and how is it going to bite them in the ass?
A few weeks ago, if you guys can all remember back that far to episode 88, John and I announced that we were going to be doing one of our instant replays, which is where we watch a movie that we've never seen before and we live tweet it. And around the holidays, we've done it now every year, the last 2 years. This year, we chose to do The Grinch, the 2018 animated version with Benedict Cumberbatch as The Grinch. And we got about 20 minutes in
No, be generous. We hit the half hour mark.
Did we?
We did.
Damn. This movie
not much
was,
past it, though.
No, because this movie was so bad. And listen, the Santa Claus 2 and Home Alone 3 from last year's Instant Replay, those are bad movies. But this was like so fucking bad.
If I may, so the whole Instant Replay concept is rooted in Mystery Science Theater 3000, right? The whole Mystery Science Theater 3000 concept is rooted in movies that are so bad that they are enjoyable to watch. The whole Santa Claus series is that. None of those movies are good, but they're fun. They're so stupid and outlandish that they're fun. This was not fun. You know what I mean? Like, there's two categories of bad movies, and this was in the category where no redeeming qualities, no tongue-in-cheek, no irony. It was just bad to the point where it's like a truly bad movie, like, there's something rewarding and fun about making fun of it. This just felt like lazy. It felt like low-hanging fruit, like hitting a ball off a tee, like...
Yeah, with total punching
down. Are we really
going
to spend the rest of our night doing that? Emily turns to me half an hour and she's like, do you want to watch Parks and Rec? I was like, I sure do.
And we also learned the lesson, because this is the first time this happened to us since we had been doing any of the instant replays. We learned the lesson that if you're going to do an instant replay to kids' movies, it has to be movies that came out when we were kids.
Yes.
Because then there's like that nostalgia and campiness where I feel a weird connection to the movie despite the fact that I'm now a fucking full-grown woman. But watching a movie that's meant for kids that came out 3 years ago in order to make fun of it, maybe not the best premise for the instant replay. Like, low-hanging fruit, like
as soon as they started going down the plot route of like, oh, Cindy Lou Who's mom is stressed and she's busy with the holiday season, I was like, all right, I'm out.
Oh, I can't today. I have a list of errands a mile long and the babysitter left the sink backed up. No, I'm not complaining. I'm venting. There's a difference. Okay, I'll talk to you later. I have to get breakfast on the table.
I'm done. I'm good.
Donna who?
Donna who? That's right. I forgot about that. Donna Who. As soon as Donna Who was added as a character, I'm out. I'm washing my hands of this. I can't sit through it.
But because the lockout is still happening, and John and I, we love, we'll watch movies, TV shows, whatever.
Well, not whatever. Not The Grinch, but
yeah, that's
almost
true.
Anything.
That's true. Not The Grinch. We are going to have to start branching out a bit on Breaking Balls. We're going to start mixing in some other stuff that we like. Like, we made the sort of tongue-in-cheek top six or whatever that was a few weeks ago of Pivot Podcasts. But now, the lockout's still happening, believe it or not, 3 weeks in. And the Book of Boba Fett's coming out.
I was going to say, there was actually no COVID contact. We just had nothing to talk about for 3 weeks, so we hid.
Yeah, we wanted to do it for a third week, and DJ Benjamin was like, you get in that studio right now!
Oh, please don't make me angry, pal. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
So I don't know if anyone out there are Star Wars fans, and I fucking sure hope you are, because
I was gonna say,
if you're not, what the hell are you doing?
There's some Star Wars fans out there. Come on.
Those who are, I'm sure you know, the Book of Boba Fett, the first episode premiered on December 29th. That's actually now, the night that we're recording. And John is going to have to catch up a bit. What do you have, the second season of The Mandalorian?
Yeah, I did the first season of The Mandalorian, and for whatever reason, when the second one dropped, it was just off my radar. So I'm going to go back, watch the whole thing, catch up, and then jump into the Book of Boba Fett.
So each week, because Disney, I'm pretty sure, I don't think they release them all at the same time. I'm pretty sure they release them week to week.
I think so.
So each week we're going to talk about the previous episode of Boba Fett. So this week it drops tonight. So that means for episode 90 is when we'll discuss the first episode of the Book of Boba Fett.
And if it winds up sucking, we'll just talk about the status of the James Webb telescope that launched on Christmas. There's space stuff to talk about. Don't worry.
Oh yeah. We're going to fucking mix it up, people. I mean, you guys are bored. We're bored. We got to come up with something. So why not dabble in some of the other shit that we like to do?
Speaking of being bored and coming up with stuff to do, we had talked about, this is going to be our third month trying to do this, Em, of with the opening. So we
most
tried
would
in November.
Take the hint, but we're not.
No. We're going to keep banging our heads against the wall here. So we tried this in November and we didn't have enough dates to do it. And then we tried it in December and then we lost a couple weeks to COVID. We're trying to get a theme together with our opening calls. Right. Now, we had some ideas. Now, in November, what did we do? It was November birthdays, I think, right?
Yeah, it was the birthdays.
And then December, what we were going to do was, we got Cole the first week, I think. And then
A-Rod, Pujols.
Well, no, we didn't even get to that because of COVID. But the whole idea we had for December was guys who signed big free agent deals in December. So you kind of get the, you know, we're trying to, some kind of common thread between all these. So you listen to our opening this week was Derek Jeter. And that's the only hint that you have because there's no other context. And there's 5 weeks in January. So roll with us on this.
So just like last time, the rules, just listen to every episode, make a guess. You can add us on Twitter. You can call into the hotline and we'll only air the correct answers. So don't be afraid to call in and just give it a shot.
We're so starved for content that we just start mocking our listeners for their bad guesses. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to do that.
I know. I was just almost like, that's not a bad idea, but it is. It is. Don't worry, people. We are not going to do that. I can promise you. Speaking of promises, now, episode 40 of Breaking Balls was released on January 2nd. And in that episode, John and I had our top three New Year's resolutions for 2021. So last night at our production meeting, we were like, hey, you know what? Let's go through them and see how we did. Well, some of us did better than others. And we're just going to go through, I guess, what should we do? Like a descending order? 3, 2, 1?
I think that's the move, yeah.
Yeah, so, John, do you want to kick us off with your number three? And then let us know how you did.
Well, Em, thanks for handing it off to me. Now I'm going to hand it off to DJ Bingington to take a look back at my number three resolution for 2021.
All right, so my number three is about statistics. As you know, I talk maybe even too often. No, not too often. Just the right amount about how I'm, you know, on the journey of learning more and more about advanced statistics. And by the time the regular season starts up, I mean, well, who knows if we're going to get it in April. But by the time it does start up, I'll have been on this podcast for close to a year, if not over a year. And in that time, I feel as if I've come a long way, especially with advanced statistics and my understanding of them. I'm by no means an expert, but I feel like I'm at least conversational in them. And so one of my goals for this coming season is I want to apply those in and of themselves. You know what I mean? I spent a lot of last year kind of gauging myself and comparing them with traditional stats to kind of get my feet wet and get into it. And I feel like I'm at a place where I can think more contextually and in real time in advanced stats. So that's one of my goals with your help and with Max's help, is to try and view the coming season more so through that lens than I have in the past.
You know, when we first started Breaking Balls, I was really a stats novice. You know, I was a wins, losses, batting average kind of guy. So I'm going to say that I was successful in this one, especially just through sheer repetition and, you know, watching these games and thinking like that and talking with Emily and other people on Twitter about it. I've really become a lot more fluent in advanced stats. It's really more of a comfort zone for me than it's been. So I'm going to give myself a W on that one.
All right, DJ Bingington, why don't you cue up my number three resolution for 2021. My number three is basically the same, different side of the same coin, that I admittedly don't know much about pitching in terms of mechanics, and certainly I don't know much about pitching in terms of advanced statistics. So in 2021, I really want to focus a little bit more on pitching and be able to be a little bit more well-versed and feel more comfortable discussing it on this pod and online and with other fans. So that's one of my goals for this year. That was much in the same vein as John's, and I didn't learn as much as I think I could have about pitchers and pitching mechanics and metrics, but I did learn more than I knew at that point in time. So I'm going to give myself a W for that as well. Even though we've learned that wins and losses are not a great stat for pitchers, I'm going to give myself a W for this one.
I was going to say, so you give yourself a W, but it's meaningless. Got it.
Yes.
All right, here's my number two resolution for 2021.
So my number two ties into my number three. It's simply to watch more baseball games, and specifically more non-Mets games. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to be watching every single Mets game that I possibly can. But I found that in previous years, my not even interest level, but just the amount that I've watched other teams play ebbs and flows over the course of the season. You know, really excited in the beginning. And then by the time it's like late May, I'm just watching Mets games. I want to make a concerted effort to make my way around the league more this year. Because again, that's only going to add to the context of all the statistics and stuff that I'm talking about. And we can always understand this game better. And the more that you watch it, especially not your team, I feel, because there's a, you know, there's an amount of homerism and thinking about things differently. Just being an impartial viewer to more baseball games is something that I want to get more into in 2021.
Pretty straightforward. I watched more baseball this past season than I've ever watched in my entire life. Granted, a lot of them were Yankees games and Padres games. Thank you, Emily. But no, but it's true though. In addition to almost every Mets games, like I said, ton of Padres, ton of Yankees. I feel like almost every day I watched some baseball, which I've never done before. So yeah, definitely a W.
And now my number two resolution from 2021. My number two is I'm going to try, emphasis on try, to go a little bit easier on Homer Yankee fans. I don't want to be as much of a jerk as I feel like I have been in the past, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally. So this year, I'm going to make a concerted effort to listen to their perspectives and not be as dismissive as I have of some in the past. I have a feeling that I didn't stick to that one probably much further than the episode ended. Like, I feel like I probably dunked on Homer Yankee fans in the episode later on, or Certainly right after we ended on Twitter.
I'm going to go out on a limb here because we recorded that at the end of December 2020 and it dropped January 1st. I don't think you made it between the recording and the episode dropping without doing that. I can say that with confidence.
Yeah, no shot whatsoever. No regrets.
All right, and now my number one resolution from 2021.
My number one is pacienza y fe, right? A little patience and faith. No, seriously, patience is my number one. And I feel that has many meanings. In an immediate sense, before I can even start watching more games and applying statistics to them, we talked about the offseason, a little patience with the offseason. That's one thing I want to start right away is, as you all should, taking a breath and having a little bit of patience, a little bit of trust in the process, right? And a big part of that is appreciating the game's very existence. 2020 showed us that baseball is not a sure thing to happen. You know, we're lucky that we got the 60 games that we did last year. So to appreciate whatever games we do get, and more specifically with the Mets, a little patience in terms of it's all very exciting with the new ownership, new GM, you know, whatever transactions are coming this offseason. A little bit of patience, not flipping out if the Mets don't win the World Series this year. You know, maybe if they don't win in 3 to 5 years, I'll flip out. But, you know, let's enjoy this year for what it's coming, for what it is. Take it one day at a time. And I want to try and approach the season with some patience.
You know, I hate to brag, but I love to brag. I'm 3 for 3. I nailed it. I did. And I think that's really exemplified by, look what happened to the Mets this past offseason. I was patient. I stuck with the program. I believed in what they were doing. And now we got Max Scherzer and we got Buck Showalter and we got Starling Marte. And things are looking up in Queens, man. So, yeah, 3 for 3 on New Year's resolutions. Pretty good job, John. Thanks, John. I know.
And now my number one New Year's resolution for 2021. My number one is to watch more Central teams. I have shit on the Central in the past, and it's mainly because I never watch them because it's too close to Eastern Standard Time. And by the time the Yankee games are over or the Mets games are over, their games are almost over. So I just go right to West Coast games. This year, and thanks in part to Quinn, one of our listeners who is a lifelong Cardinals fan, I feel I owe it to our Central fans and our Central listeners to pay attention to their divisions and give their teams a shot. So this is the year. Wow. I mean, that one, listen, this list was very ambitious for me, first of all. I don't think I watched a single Central game beyond, and it doesn't even count as a Central game, the NL wildcard game with the Cardinals versus the Dodgers. I did watch that. Quinn, if you're listening, sorry, since I use you and other Central fans as a reason that I probably should, and then I immediately just did not do any of that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously New Year's resolutions aren't a contest, but I won.
And this is the first time, probably because I lost by the time that John decided it was a contest, where I wasn't immediately like, yeah, I'm into this being a competition for some reason. He brought it up earlier and I was like, well, it's not a competition. And I couldn't even fucking believe that word came out of my mouth.
Emily's top New Year's resolution is to win this year's resolutions.
And now let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Matt.
Hey guys, season's greetings. This is Matt from Farmingville, Polo Grounds Grass in My Yard on Twitter. So I'm going to try and keep this brief, but during this lockout period, I wanted to bring up a topic Emily, you and I got into a little bit on Twitter about, and that is I'm not a big Pete Rose guy. I think his stats, he should be in the Hall of Fame based on his stats, but we know he voluntarily signed his ban from baseball, whatever. That topic's been beat to death. But my thing is, the reason Pete and Shula Show are out is because of gambling and baseball's longtime hardline stance against gambling. Something that was brought to my attention recently was that Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle actually were briefly banned from baseball for appearing as casino greeters in the early 80s. They were reinstated at a commissioner change. But with baseball now having this huge partnership with the gambling sites, and then the news coming out recently about MLB changing baseballs from game to game, and also the difference being that, you know, back in days of Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe, you were basically just betting on outcomes or long-term, you know, whether you win the pennant or something like that. With the gambling today being so specific, like you can bet on, oh, Aaron Judge will hit a home run in this game, you know, over under 0.5 home runs, you know, and get a specific number on that. With baseball insiders apparently knowing that they're going to change the ball from game to game as this went on last year, how does that not compromise the idea of a level playing field that, you know, it's just, to me, it seems, and I think that's what we got into it a little bit on Twitter, that I think it's a little bit hypocritical to be so against baseball for so against gambling and baseball for so many years, and now to be like, hey, we're going to put a sports book parlor right in Wrigley Field. You could bet right from your phone at the game. Now, I know it's the fans that are betting and not the players and hopefully managers, but it just seems like a real slippery slope to me that you're going to be so okay with this, and then something comes out like they're changing the ball. Like, if you had that information, you could bet the over for that day knowing that they're using the ball that flies out more. And I'm interested in your take on that, guys. And again, enjoy your holidays. Thanks, guys.
Matt, I can absolutely understand your perspective in terms of just, it feels gross. And we've touched on it before that personally, and I know John feels the same way, that I could definitely do without all of the gambling stuff being shoved in my face. I mean, I'm not used to it on any level because I don't even watch football, which is a sport that's been in bed with sports gambling for a very long time. But like you said, that there is a difference between the players and the managers gambling and casinos and sports betting advertising with Major League Baseball. That is still not allowed. Players, managers, whatever, coaches, anyone who is associated with the team is still not allowed to gamble on games. That is still the golden rule. And I mean, I honestly think that this has a lot to do with, like, because no one said any of this about football. And obviously football doesn't have the same past with gambling, like, you know, the Black Sox or whatever. But this is where MLB and MLB fans, the obsession with history gets in the way of being able to move forward. Is that because the game is so obsessed with its history that in other sports, something that happened in 1919, no one would give a shit about anymore and would never talk about it and would have nothing to do with the discourse of today.
And not just because those sports didn't exist in 1919?
Well, yeah, exactly. But whenever they started,
Yeah.
So because MLB loves to beat us over the head with its history, it then forces, like, it gives, like, this, like, we have to put the sport on a pedestal and the league has to be on a pedestal. And it's like, oh, it's grimy that they're in bed with the sports betting, but they're like the only sport that hasn't been like this of the major sports. Like, this is how the sport stays alive in today's day and age. And that's unfortunate, but it's just the way it is, I think.
And I think we're kind of honing in on it. Like, that's part of why it feels gross. You know what I mean? Not like it was in some state of purity and, you know, no corruption. Like, we know that it has its issues, obviously. But, like, willfully getting in bed with gambling companies, it whether they like it or not, it opens that door to all these questions now that they didn't have. They could at least have the appearance of being above that kind of stuff. But now they're inviting those questions actively by embracing the whole thing. And maybe that's part of why it feels gross. You know, it's like questions that we didn't used to have to ask. They're forcing our hand, and we have to think like this now in terms of like, oh, is this all above board? Are they doing any like even small tweaks to try and affect this and make a few extra bucks? Like, it's just, again, it's a line of questioning we didn't used to have to go down, and now we do. And I think that's part of what feels gross about it.
And I think that we should remember that this wouldn't be happening if sports betting weren't mainstream, which it is now. So I think that there will be like fans like you, Matt, and even us at times, because we touched on this in the past, where we can question, is the line blurred? Is there, is the fix in, you know, are the noodles boiling or whatever the fucking sayings are from like the 30s gambling? But because it's mainstream, the vast majority of fans aren't going to think that, because gambling is no longer like this back alley seedy thing. It's now in your living room, and it's what people our age and younger than us, the now people who are about to enter the workforce, it's normal for them. So is what they're going to be spending their money on. So it's not going to fuck with the integrity of the game at first. Who's to say for years from now? Matt, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. I just got a question. Every single year, why do people think Omar Vizquel is good or like Hall of Fame worthy? I mean, even if he wasn't a scumbag, which we now know he is, like we know he's a scumbag now, and there are still people out here like, oh yeah, he's better than Scott Rolen. And these people get paid to write about baseball, and this is what they come up with. This is their job, and they're like, yep, this guy who played for a quarter of a century and was above average hitter like twice, he's definitely better than, every year we do this, every year.
Quinn, now you know I love the Omar Vizquel conversation. And what I'm about to say is not actually funny, but I'm going to use the term funny for lack of a better one at this point in time. A funny turn of events this voting cycle has been the amount of ballots that we've seen that have dropped Vizquel, and rightfully so. Like you said, he's a scumbag. That story came out last year about him terrorizing and abusing his wife, and a lot of the voters, it seems, have reacted to that. Now, why that's interesting is because I think that that highlights the sort of player he actually was, because the voting process has proven that they actually don't care about domestic violence if a player is good enough. Because notice that the conversation with Bonds is never about his domestic violence issues. It's always just about PEDs. Or same thing with Sheffield or Manny Ramirez. All these guys who have been accused by their spouses and significant others have crossed that invisible line where now it doesn't matter that they terrorize the women in their life. They're good enough to have that be something that doesn't weigh them down. Whereas Vizquel obviously wasn't at a level of player where he could still withstand that story coming out and everyone finding out. So I feel like that in and of itself, and it feels gross to say because of the context, but that's the answer. He's not actually a Hall of Famer, and the proof is in the pudding in that all it took was the DV story and him being a fucking monster, and all of a sudden everyone is now like, yeah, he shouldn't be in. Well, you obviously didn't think he was that great of a player because you're voting for all of these other guys who have fucking domestic violence issues. So there we go.
Well, and that's the thing to me, is like dropping your vote for Vizquel when you voted for him previously, it's both at the same time. It's both the right thing to do, and it's also largely performative if you don't do it to all the other guys with them. You know what I mean? It's an easy choice when it's like, oh, this just came out. Oh, this is somewhat confirmed. Oh, we know how awful this was. Just because we know more does not make the other one something that happened less or that matters less, you know?
100%.
So it's just a case of like, yeah, that seems like an obvious choice for these writers. Well, you got to drop Vizquel now. You can't in good conscience. Okay, yada, yada, yada. But then they can't be bothered to do their due diligence on the other guys. Like, you know, I give a lot of credit to our former stat guru, Max Greenfield. His hypothetical ballot that he released on Twitter the other day, you know, there was no Bonds, there was no Clement, and his reasoning is very simple. It's like, if you have an accusation of domestic violence, you're off. Character clause. Boom. That simple. And you could argue for or against that, but at the end of the day, that does follow the guidelines of the hall, and there's nothing saying that you can't vote that way. And from a moral and ethical standpoint, it's pretty consistent.
Quinn, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Nick.
Sucks you guys got COVID. Hope that all y'all are okay. Hope everyone is okay. You know, lockout's still there. So I guess it's going to be a while. But the new football queen is Emily Nyman. Emily, who do you think is going to play in the Super Bowl this year for the AFC and the NFC? Take care, guys.
DJ Bingington, cue the music.
Okay, dokey.
Nick, you are absolutely right to call me the football queen. And much like queens, I actually need John to answer this question for me because, first of all, which teams are in the AFC and which teams are in the NFC?
All right, so do you want me to list all the football teams and
please,
which conference they're in?
Please, God.
All right, I mean, I would say if we're playing it safe and not, like, trying to do anything creative with it, the easy choice for the NFC is the Packers right now. And in the AFC, the Chiefs. Packers, Chiefs, is that's the safest bet. Obviously, you know, any given Sunday, all that, anything could happen. But the only ones that have, like, locked it down in the AFC is Kansas City, and Green Bay locked it down first in the NFC. So if we're not being creative with our guesses, Chiefs, Packers. I'll take the Packers in that one, by the way.
And as any good co-host, I will take the Chiefs, even though I picked that quarterback on my fantasy teams and he was not good for a lot of the year. And then I stopped paying attention because I am a spoiled brat. And I was like, I'm not playing this anymore.
Well, I was going to say, for what it's worth, I had Mahomes on my team and he ruined my season at some point. So yeah, I'm a little salty.
Nick, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Bubak.
I kind of wanted to just get on here and just kind of, you know, so you guys can hear my voice again. I know everybody's been missing me, but I want to get into something that's been bugging me a little bit. My wife has been on me a little bit here with wearing a vest, and I just need to get down to the nitty gritty, and I need some advice from some people that you know, some very fashionable people. And John and M and DJ, I think you're the best option for me going forward in this fashion advice here. My wife thinks that I should wear a vest. What if my arms get cold? Then I'm fucked. I can't figure out the whole point of a vest. Just fucking put on a coat, because then your arms are good and your chest is good. You know, this is a rabbit hole that we could be on for hours. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I told you shit's going to get weird, and you know, weird is my middle name. So I love you guys. Let's hope baseball comes back soon, because it's getting kind of, it sucks. It really sucks. I love you guys. Have a happy new year. Hope you had a great Christmas. Let's go. Woo! Bubak out!
Wow, there's been a lot of firsts for me in this voicemail section. I've never had anyone refer to me as a football queen, and I've also never had anyone tell me that I am fashionable and ask me for fashion advice like this.
Vests generally suck. I would give the occasional sweater vest the pass, but you're better off with something with sleeves. You know, got to get a full sweater, get a blazer, a hoodie, long sleeve t-shirt even.
In the fall, though, I will say vests can be good, like the puffy vest.
Oh, like a down vest.
Right, that, because they do keep you warm, and you may not need all that. Like, having your armpits covered up in the winter helps keep you warm, but it can also make you hot as fuck in, like, the fall, where it's not quite cold enough to really justify it. So the in-between seasons, I can see it.
See, now that's true. Vests, as far as keeping you warm, because I like sweater vests for that, too. I wear those to work sometimes. But as far as just, like, a regular vest for fashion, not my style, personally. There are people who can pull it off. But I am definitely not a vest first person. If I'm going to go no sleeves, I go full tank top. Like, I don't do like the cutoff t-shirts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's DJ Bingington is the same way. He fucking hates sleeves. And anything that's a long sleeve shirt, he will push up the sleeves to his elbows, no matter, barring none, sweatshirts, anything. So he is right there with you. Though he doesn't wear too many vests. I know that he does love them, though.
Well, it's a lot of white t-shirts rolled up. He looks like a greaser.
Fonz? Hey, yeah. Hey.
Bubak, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from James.
Emily, John, it's James back again. Glad you guys are feeling better. Happy New Year to all of y'all. So my question for you for both is, Emily, where do you see the Yankees as far as moves, and where would you like moves to be addressed first? And John, for your Mets, what do you think the biggest need that you guys have to address once the lockout is over? All these questions are assuming the collective bargaining gets agreed upon and we're back to free agency baseball.
James, I think that they have to address the shortstop position. They need to go right after, hopefully, Correa. That's where I am praying for every single night. But I can't see them really doing anything else before that happens, because that's going to really determine a lot as far as, I'm sure, their payroll and shit is concerned.
You know, I got to say, I like taking a visit to this fantasy world where, you know, the CBA was just no problem.
I know. And
regular free agencies back. That's a good question, James. I would say for the Mets, we got to add another bat, especially with McNeil going up on the block. I like the idea of Chris Bryant, but there's a lot of good options out there. I think we also need another starting pitcher. We could use another arm as well.
James, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Block.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. It's Block. Since we're locked out, let's talk about old time stuff. I've noticed over the last few years, it seems like I see more and more Don Mattingly love and Don Mattingly references on Yankee Twitter, and it seems to be growing exponentially. I've been trying to figure out why, and I think what I came up with is the further we get from the last Yankees championship, the more the fan base relates to a fucking loser like Mattingly who never got a chip. Your thoughts? Again, all my love. Happy New Year.
Wow, a lot to unpack there. And I almost want to say I agree with you, but a different side of the same coin, in that I've always kind of found it strange how many Yankee fans will like almost fetishize Mattingly and they put him on a pedestal, but they're also the same fans that will be like, oh yeah, well, how many championships has that player won? Oh, Trout? Well, let me see him in the playoffs. Don Mattingly literally made it to the playoffs one time and they fucking lost. So
I was going to say, because if you do a Don Mattingly appreciation year, it's 1995 again, which means next year is 1996.
Block, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Dave.
Hello, Breaking Balls. It is I, Dave. It's been far too long, but the holidays have just made me so blue and fat and lazy. And the end of baseball has me in my off-seasonal depression. And now this lockout. How are you guys doing? Shout out to the food guy. I tried Duke's Mayo, by the way. It's great. Shout out to Blocky. Enjoying the boy bands that you recommended. He secretly likes boy bands, by the way. Anyway, I don't know what to really talk about. This damn lockout. Do you think we're going to play baseball? Because, like, looking at the calendar, by the time this pod comes out, it's going to be, like, January. Which means in a month, pitchers and catchers. And I get, like, modern players are all parts of, like, I don't know why I said parts like that, are part of, like, you know, sports complexes, and they're going to stay in shape and stuff. But are you guys worried we might not get baseball? Got a lot of free agents out there. I'm happy with the Mets so far, but I think we need one more bat. Totally happy with Max Scherzer. I'm sure you guys have all talked about this in the podcast that I've missed. But I guess the million-dollar question is, are we going to have baseball, and where is Carlos Correa going to sign? And what are the chances of the Mets getting him, John? And I love you guys. Love the pod. Love the whole, like, gang that listens and talks on the Twitter. I still have you guys on alerts. I still comment. You see that. But I apologize. I haven't called in a while. You know, holidays are rough. Anyway, stay sharp. Stay doing what you're doing. Love you guys. Bye.
Dave, I'm at the point now where I almost feel uncomfortable saying whether I do or don't think there's going to be baseball. I just fucking hope there is. I'm going to will this into existence and say, yes, we are going to have baseball this year. And I really just hope that the fucking greedy pig bastard owners maybe get slightly less greedy in the new year. I don't know. Please, God, let there be baseball.
Quick, lazy prediction. We do have baseball. It does not start on time.
I mean, that's why he's the best co-host in the damn league, folks.
Because I'm not a former player and I'm less superstitious than Emily.
Dave, thank you so much for your call and welcome back. And thank you to all of our callers. You guys are awesome. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun? Feeling brassy? Need fashion advice? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. Seeing as how this is our first episode of the new year, being released on New Year's Day, what better episode than to drop our 2022 New Year's resolutions? So, John, you want to kick us off with your number three?
All right. So, if you recall, one of my resolutions from last year was to watch more baseball, which I did. So, I'm going to narrow that focus a little bit. So, my number three resolution for 2022 is I would like to attend more baseball games in person. More specifically, I would like to hit double-digit games in person. If I could go to 10 games or more over the course of the season, I think that would be a lot of fun. And I would like them to not all be Mets games. Check out a Yankees game, maybe even hit the road at some point, you know.
My number three, I'm getting back up on that horse. I'm really, for real this time, going to try to be nicer to homer Yankee fans. I'm making no promises, even though this is kind of a promise. So wait, yes, I am making a promise. I'm going to be nicer, John. This is the year.
You're saying that with a straight face? Yeah? You're going with that?
Yes, I am.
All right. We'll check back in next week, actually. Screw next year. We'll check in next week on that one.
We All do right, weekly so. Check-ins during the lockout on our fucking resolutions.
How are we doing? All right, so my number two New Year's resolution for 2022. Obviously, follow the Mets the closest. And last year, partially through osmosis of being at Breaking Ball's headquarters a lot. Like I said, lots of Yankees, lots of Padres. I want to go out of my way to, in addition to the Mets, to follow an American League team this year. You know, I'm a National League guy, so expand my horizons a little bit. I think I'm going to go with the Guardians. You know, Cleveland has been my main AL team. I just haven't really followed them that closely the last couple of years. So I think it's a good opportunity. They got the new branding, the new team name. It's a good year to give them a shot. So we're going to be following the Mets and the Guardians in 2022.
My number two resolution for 2022 is I'd like to become a better researcher in that I have all of these tools. We have the Fangraphs, Baseball Reference, StatHead, and I'm pretty well-versed on the basics of how to navigate the site, and I'm a pretty good researcher as it is now, but I probably know maybe, you know, 2% of what these websites can do, and I really just want to make a concerted effort to learn more about them and how to do all the you can make your own boards with all your own stats and all this other shit, so I really want to get into that a little bit more.
Is step one, like, actually utilizing the stuff that you print out every week?
No, that, excuse you, that is part of my superstition, kind of.
That's part of the process, John.
Yeah, trust it. The process.
So my number one New Year's resolution for 2022, and this goes beyond baseball, but to keep the focus on baseball, I don't want to take anything for granted. And that goes for life in general. You know, 2021 was a rough year. It's ending on some rough notes. But even with baseball... It's pretty funny. Last year, I was saying, like, oh, well, you know, after that shortened season of 2020, we can't take anything for granted. We're in a lockout now, and now we really can't take anything for granted. So whatever baseball we get next year, whatever games I get to see Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer pitch, I don't want to take any of it for granted. I want to appreciate all of it, whatever we're able to get. And again, that's a philosophy to apply to baseball and to everything else, but it's a baseball podcast, so narrow the focus.
That's a really good one, and it's a lot better than my number one. So we should have switched places on this, but I'm going to go through with it anyway. My number one is to have better number ones on these top lists. No, I'm just kidding.
No, your number one is I want to win the resolutions next year.
My number one is, and I'm not even sure if this is a resolution per se, but I want to try to get a current Major League Baseball player on this pod.
Mm.
As you all listening have known, we don't have many guests. We've had... I think four total. And I'd like to try to branch out a little bit more this year, focus on our effort of getting a current player, just to talk about the lockout, talk about the season, talk about preparation and athletes now, yada, yada. So I'm really going to actually try to make that happen this year.
And I will gladly be the beneficiary of your hard work.
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners and, of course, all of our callers. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ Bingington. And we will catch you guys next week.